ocean breeze, tropical beach, piña colada. You can buy an air freshener to make your car smell like you're in an oceanside paradise. Or, better yet, you can point your car toward Daytona Beach and come experience the real thing. Visit DaytonaBeach.com to discover all there is to see, do, and enjoy along the world's most famous beach, Daytona Beach, Florida. Beach on.
In Atlanta, one voice has stood out for over four decades. An AJC original, The Monica Pearson Show.
Let's talk about how you got to ESPN.
Revealing interviews.
You are known as America's doctor, but I want to know who you were before that.
When you have a different name, you have different color skin, it can be tough.
With Atlanta's most famous faces as you've never seen them before.
I'm telling my story. This is the American dream.
The Monica Pearson Show, streaming now on AJC.com.
The rematch is on. Welcome to episode 190 of the Politically Georgia podcast from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. I'm your host, Greg Bluestein, and I'm joined by Patricia Murphy, the AJC's political insider columnist. And we're actually two of the political insiders here at the AJC, and a big announcement we've been expecting for really 3 years has now arrived.
Opportunity and success in Georgia shouldn't be determined by your zip code, background, or access to power. But if our Georgia is going to move to its next and greatest chapter, we're going to need leadership.
That's the message from Stacey Abrams' announcement video on Wednesday that she will indeed challenge Brian Kemp for governor in 2022.
Leadership that knows how to do the job. Leadership that doesn't take credit without also taking responsibility. Leadership that understands the true pain folks are feeling and has real plans. That's the job of governor. To fight for one Georgia, our Georgia. And now it's time to get the job done.
Patricia, we have been expecting this news really since she ended her campaign for governor in 2018 after about 10 days of purgatory. So this is not a surprise. We've been using the term expected to run for governor, the phrase, over and over again in just about every story we've written about the governor's race for next year. And yet still, it helps crystallize the moment and the dynamic going into 2022 here in Georgia.
Oh, yes. Greg, let the games begin. I am so excited for this race. And congrats to you for breaking the news. I think on Twitter, you got like 62 million likes for this particular story. But yeah, this just sets up just an epic rematch between, we think, Stacey Abrams and Governor Brian Kemp, you know, but it won't be a replay. This state has really changed in the last 3 years since the last time these two went up against each other. And then, of course, we have the extra added dynamic that Governor Kemp may have a real primary on his hands. We don't know that yet, but it's the same two candidates, but it is not the same situation.
You're exactly right. I mean, Georgia's electorate has changed. Hundreds of thousands of new voters have been added to the rolls. Many of them are minority and younger. And of course, for the first time now, Democrats can actually say for the first time in about 20 years, Democrats can say, hey, we've won a statewide race. We've won the presidential contest. You know, the last time a Democrat held the governor's office was in 2002 when Roy Barnes was upset by Sonny Perdue. But now Democrats have reversed that string of defeats.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And I think there's no way to really overstate what a difference it makes in voters' psyche to believe that your vote could actually make a difference and the party that you support could really win. And so I think for Democrats, the fact that they were able to flip those two U.S. Senate seats and win the White House, that has really just changed. You can just feel it in the conversations we have with Democratic strategists, in the conversations with Democratic voters. They are so much more activated, energized, and they really believe that there could be a Governor Stacey Abrams. I think it used to be an aspiration for those activists, and now it's a plan. And so this really sets up quite a dynamic for the next year.
And as important as it is to voters, it's also important to donors and activists, the people who give the money to fuel these campaigns and who knock on the doors and make the phone calls and send the text messages. Because I talked to so many Democratic top-level strategists who said, hey, they got tired in 2018, 2016, 2014 of saying, this state's on the verge of flipping, the state's on the verge, when it really wasn't. And then you have the actual flip in 2020. So now they can actually go to those donors, and they already are. I mean, Stacey Abrams, one of the reasons she could afford to wait this long is because she has become such a fundraising powerhouse, really a Democratic icon, someone who's raised her profile in defeat more than maybe she would have raised it had she won in 2018.
Yeah, that's such a great point. Her Fair Fight Action Group has raised $100 million since she lost her campaign. I mean, that is just so unheard of. And those donors now, Georgia didn't just flip. It didn't just happen to turn blue. It's Stacey Abrams who has given a lot of the credit for the organization, for the entire approach to Democrats running races in the state. For so long, it had been sort of a soft-pedaled message of, oh, we're Democrats, but we're not liberals. Don't worry, we're not scary. But vote for us anyway. It just wasn't a real galvanizing message. Stacey Abrams has always taken the approach to have a crystal clear message, very progressive, but to really register and turn out the voters who agree with you, not to try and win over people who only half agree with you. And so that worked in 2020. There are decades, of course, of activists and the history in the state of particularly the black electorate registering, turning each other out. But she really managed to really solve that puzzle in 2020. She's given a lot of credit for that. So the fact that it's her at the top of the ticket and not a more generic Democrat running for them is really going to bring donors in, I think, lots of national attention. It's just going to be a big race.
Yeah, we used the phrase unconventional approach a lot in 2018 because it was back then. I mean, she ran as an unapologetic progressive. That was a phrase that she liked to use. And yet she also appealed to the mainstream, sort of the middle of the road voters, because what she usually talked about on the campaign trail was expanding Medicaid, boosting education funding, fighting income inequality, you know, helping struggling Georgians with tax breaks, things like that. That if you polled them like we often poll at Medicaid expansion, show an overwhelming support. And yet she also, you know, especially when asked, right? Sometimes she wouldn't bring it up on the forefront, but she was asked about, do you support, let's say, gun control? Do you support, at one point in the campaign, she said she expressed support for reparations, you know, national issues that a governor has very little say over. Do you support removing the faces of reimagining Stone Mountain, right? That got her in some hot water from Republicans. But she's always said, hey, this is not what my campaign will be about. But yeah, I don't believe in the Confederate legacy of Stone Mountain. So those are issues that will help drive this race. But really, I expect her to take on the same issues that she did in 2018, you know, putting expanding Medicaid first and foremost, even as Congress works on a sort of a workaround to force Georgia to expand Medicaid, whether or not the incumbent governor wants to or.
Yeah. And those issues are just broadly popular, like you said. And I think that's because more and more Georgians find themselves, as we kind of continue to see a disparity between the highest and lowest incomes in the state and disparity between the prosperity in Atlanta and the real lack of prosperity in the rural parts of the state. More and more people find themselves sort of slipping between those cracks and having those surprise medical bills. That's a big issue, even for Republicans. So these are people's real lives. And I think she has done a lot of work to get out and meet with people, meet with voters. I think the last campaign really informed her as well, what people really care about in their daily lives. But then, you know, at the same time, I was so struck. I went back and watched some old debate footage where Greg Bluestein was a frequent panelist in a lot of those debates. the conversation has changed so much since 2020, and I think particularly on social justice issues. She is in a space where I think more Georgians are going to be with her this time around. There was one debate question where she was asked about the time that she had burned a Georgia state flag, and she said, well, there was a Confederate flag on it. So yes, this was a peaceful protest, and there was a Confederate flag on it. But the nature of the question was like, shouldn't you maybe have not burned that Confederate flag? It was just a totally different tone than I think we're going to see this time around. And I think she is going to be, she'll be a different kind of candidate in that way, because more and more Georgians have had that own conversation with themselves and their families than even they did in 2020.
Yeah, I mean, one of the unique aspects of that 2018 race, and we remember writing about it as a sort of preview for what we could see in 2020, but both candidates did not aggressively try to reach that middle. They might have welcomed the middle, but they did play to their bases in a way that basically they both said, hey, the middle will come either way, right? But we're not going to go spend our time trying to appeal to white suburban voters who used to be Republican. If you're Stacey Abrams, or for Governor Kemp, he basically bypassed Atlanta. He spent a lot of money on ads here in the metro area, but in the closing weeks of the race, he was anywhere but Atlanta, really appealing to the Republican core. And I wouldn't be shocked to see a repeat of that strategy from both these candidates.
Yeah, I agree. You know, Stacey Abrams is going to have a little bit of an easier time holding off on that decision, because she is not going to have a primary. And if Brian Kemp does have a primary and he does get a strong challenge from David Perdue, that is going to be all about the 2020 election. It's going to be all about Donald Trump. It's just going to put Kemp in a really weird space that he's going to have to defend if he gets through a primary, when he has to come back around and discuss that with general election voters.
Yeah, let's get into that right now, actually, because Governor Kemp, he says basically, bring it on.
Oh, I love it. I mean, it's not shocking. That's why we've been working so hard. I think it's a rallying point for Republicans, because we know that this is just not the Georgia radicals that we're going to be facing. It's going to be the Hollywood crowd and everybody else that's going to flood money in here. All these different third-party groups are going to be out there advocating. I mean, we got to fight like we've never fought before. But I will tell you, the reaction that I got yesterday is people are ready to get in that fight.
The governor is stuck in the middle of a major political squeeze, and former President Donald Trump is vocally leading the opposition in his own party.
Look, I can't control what other people are saying. You know, I can control what I'm saying and what I'm reminding Georgians out there of. I ran on issues that I wanted to do as governor, and I have done those. And I'm going to remind people about that. You know, these other people that are talking about certain things, they're free to do that. But we're going to talk about what I think Georgians care about. You know, Georgians care about having a governor that will do something to keep their families safe when you have people literally being shot and law enforcement officers killed in our capital city and in the metro area. It seems like almost weekly. You know, I'm the one that's been in the fight on those issues. That's what I'm going to be talking about. If other people are making noise, they can certainly do that. I know they're worried about television ratings and other things, but I'm worried about one rating, and that's going to be on Election Day, November 2022.
And it was Sean Hannity who said on Fox News after Abrams' announcement that Kemp should stand aside.
Kemp has been very ineffective as a governor, and frankly, for the sake of the state of Georgia, I think he should probably bow out of the race. I think the candidate to watch, and I hope he gets in, would be former Senator David Perdue. He would be a much better candidate versus Stacey Abrams. If Kemp does stay in, well, that would also hurt Herschel Walker in his Senate race against Raphael Warnock.
Patricia, there's a lot of pressure on the governor from both sides.
My God, what a nightmare. Like, literally, I'm sure Brian Kemp is like, when am I going to wake up from this nightmare? It is a catastrophe. Sean Hannity. Oh, my God. I almost can't wrap my head around it. But let's get back to Brian Kemp. He's right. There is nothing he can do to control what people say. And the people is Donald Trump. And he has a gigantic problem on his hands. Brian Kemp does. Because Donald Trump has just made it his business to destroy Brian Kemp. I agree with Brian Kemp that most Georgians want to know what a governor is going to do for them. Most Georgians are are going to want to know, is the economy continue to stay strong? Am I going to have access to healthcare? Are my kids going to grow up in a safe community? Most Georgians do want that. But he has to worry about those Georgians on the margin, that MAGA crowd that may or may not turn out for him and may or may not give him the rating he wants on election day. I just can't imagine being Brian Kemp every day right now.
I was texting one of his aides after re-listening to the audio of his press conference on Thursday. I said, you know, he's taking a very zen-like approach to this. I can only control what I can control, which is, as you mentioned, is probably the best thing, because he's not going to ever win back over Donald Trump unless the rapture comes or something dramatic. It does not seem like that is ever going to happen. Hey, let's take a quick break. And when we come back, we'll talk about David Perdue.
Ocean breeze, tropical beach. An air freshener can make your car smell like paradise. A drive to Daytona Beach will actually get you there. Beach on. Plan your trip today at DaytonaBeach.com.
Donald Trump has been indicted in Atlanta.
We have so many court dockets to follow, but we haven't really seen anything yet.
The Atlanta Journal-Constitution has covered every moment of this historic case.
I've been writing about this investigation for 2.5 years.
Our team is led by reporters Bill Rankin and Tamar Hallerman. Follow our coverage on AJC.com and listen to new in-depth episodes of the award-winning podcast, Breakdown, The Trump Indictment, only from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution.
Welcome back. I'm Greg Bluestein, your host of the Politically Georgia podcast, and I'm here with Patricia Murphy. Don't forget, both of us, along with our Washington correspondent, Tia Mitchell, team up every day and every night to produce what we think is the best tip sheet on Metro Atlanta and Georgia politics. We call it The Jolt. It's in your inbox early, so it's ready when you are every morning. One of the very many benefits you can only get if you subscribe to the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. So we've mentioned Donald Trump's enduring rage towards Brian Kemp and the squeeze that the governor is in right now, but we haven't really talked yet about that potential primary challenger, former Senator David Perdue, who has now been open. For a while, it was kind of under wraps, but now he's been openly talking about how he's conflicted about running. He's considering running against Governor Kemp, and he said that essentially told our friend Martha Zoller over at WDUN that he feels like our leaders have caved to pressure rather than fight for Donald Trump. So if he would run, that's a preview of his message. It would be based on his loyalty to the former president. And of course, the former president has egged him on, encouraged him to run, and would basically has assured him his endorsement.
Yeah, well, you know, that's a message that I think is not going to be a November 2022 message. But if you look into the polling, a large majority of Georgians in Georgia do not think that the last election was fair and square. There's a lot of suspicion among Republicans in Georgia, driven by Donald Trump, that there was election fraud, which we all know after every court challenge, et cetera. There's just been no evidence that anything fraudulent happened in the election that would have changed those results. But that's a message that does resonate among that Republican base. And so Brian Kemp is going to talk about the election integrity bill, as they call it, that the Georgia legislature passed. He'll use that as a proof point. But there's just no getting around the fact that he did not flip the election in Donald Trump's favor. And that's why Donald Trump is mad at him. It's really just that simple. And that's the opening that David Perdue has. It may give him an opening in a primary enough to really cause some problems. I don't know if that would win a primary in Georgia. It definitely wouldn't win a general election in Georgia, because that's really what the last general election in Georgia was about. Donald Trump on the front page of the AJC the Sunday before Election Day saying, look, fellas, give me 11,000 votes. You know, I'm convinced that was a huge part of Joe Biden's victory here, was because people were trying to just vote against Donald Trump and in the election in 2021. So to relitigate that again will not be a winning message for a general electorate, but it is, I think, obviously more than enough to kick up some real dust in a GOP primary.
And that's the challenge for Governor Kemp, right? With Donald Trump's approval ratings, at least in the last poll we've done a few months ago, still high among Republicans. And this is not the only race that he's also obviously playing in Georgia. And that's why this Georgia could be the real test in the midterms around the nation of Donald Trump's grip on the Republican Party, because he's warring with this incumbent governor and likely to endorse David Perdue if he gets him. And we can say he's guaranteed to endorse David Perdue if he gets him. He's endorsed Herschel Walker in the Senate race over two or three other Republican candidates with more political experience and with different backgrounds. And he's endorsed Jody Heiss in the Secretary of State's race and Burt Jones in the Lieutenant Governor race over Senate leaders and Republican leaders who he views as didn't help him enough to reverse the election outcome. So he is playing in a major way in Georgia's statewide races. And again, I mean, the question goes back. People like to compare Georgia to Virginia and worry about Democrats in particular were worried about, hey, is Virginia a bad sign for what could happen in Georgia? And we don't know, but we do know that Virginia didn't have to worry about the same internal Republican rifts that are on display in Georgia with the warring factions and with this former president, continuing to assail Brian Kemp, Secretary of State Brad Raffensperger, Lieutenant Governor Jeff Duncan, who's not standing for re-election. And then you never know what the next email will bring. It's not a tweet anymore, but you never know what the next mass email will bring if you're a Republican elected official who's still looking over his or her shoulder.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Virginia was such an interesting test case because Donald Trump was quite literally not a factor. He did not campaign for Glenn Youngkin in Virginia, and that was because Glenn Youngkin didn't want him in Virginia. Georgians are not going to have that same situation. Brian Kemp will not have that same situation. But even just the brief endorsement from Donald Trump for all of those other candidates has been enough to pop all of them up to the top of the pile in those GOP primaries. And so it's a real factor for Brian Kemp. Kemp has, I think, a really strong story to tell. The economy in Georgia is just absolutely roaring right now. We have the lowest unemployment in history for those who are in the labor pool. Obviously, there's a whole nother conversation about people who have dropped out of the workforce. But, you know, Kemp has, I think, a lot to take back to voters. It's just this single factor of Donald Trump being personally angry at him about the 2020 election, which wouldn't even have won the White House for him. But you can just feel the rage just emanating from these emails, how angry he is at Brian Kemp. And that's the only thing that Brian Kemp really has to worry about between now and a primary. But it's very, very real.
And we're also told that David Perdue shares that anger, which is one reason why he's considering running. But the main motivating factor is a fear from him and his supporters that Brian Kemp will lose to Stacey Abrams, in part because Trump will continue his fight against Brian Kemp. It's sort of this never-ending circle, right? There is the problems kind of feed on each other, but we can assume that if Brian Kemp gets the nomination, because of Trump's words, he says MAGA voters will never support Brian Kemp. So the same issue that dogged Senate runoff candidates this past January, when tens of thousands of reliably Republican voters stayed home rather than vote for Kelly Loeffler or David Perdue, you can sense that this could magnify if Brian Kemp is the nominee. So David Perdue saying, "Hey, I'm the only guy who can beat Stacey Abrams and keep the governor's mansion in Republican hands over the next two decades." But after two decades of rule, I should say, his time is the clock is ticking, and there's a big question now about whether or not Stacey Abrams, who is expected to get in, but maybe not in December. I mean, I personally thought she would wait until the new year. So there's a big question about whether or not this speeds up his own timeline, because if he's already leaning towards running, which is what we're told he is, his friends say that he's leaning towards a run. Will he go ahead and pull the trigger in the next week, or will he wait until after the holidays, maybe after the national championship game? because that's a serious concern. If Georgia is in the national championship game, the state's attention will be divided, right? So will he wait until after that game in kind of early January, mid-January, to announce his candidacy? We're going to find out pretty soon.
Yeah, well, he obviously should just go ahead and do it ASAP and leak it to the AJC so we can get a jump on it. The sooner the better, in my opinion. But, you know, it really is a self-fulfilling prophecy in a way to say, well, those Donald Trump supporters will never support Brian Kemp. They would if Donald Trump would say, support Brian Kemp. It would not be hard to get them on board. It's the very same argument with election integrity in this state. Republican voters think the last election was stolen. That's because Donald Trump said it was. If he said it wasn't, they wouldn't think that. David Perdue is right that Brian Kemp is damaged by all of this. It could be fixed very quickly by David Perdue and by Donald Trump saying that they're on board with Brian Kemp, but that is just does not appear to be in the cards. And then while all of this is happening, now that Stacey Abrams is in the race, she was in an interview last night with one of the local Atlanta affiliates. And she was asked about this dynamic between the governor and David Perdue. And she said, look, I'm going to let the Republicans fight amongst themselves. I'm going to fight for Georgia. I mean, it's just a tailor-made line for her that she can ride for 6 months, 8 months, as long as this goes on. And it just speaks to how clear the field is for her and how muddy the waters are for Republicans right now.
And by the way, that's the same tactic that Raphael Warnock and John Ossoff used in the closing days of the runoff. They said, we'll let the Republicans fight. And that just goes to their strategy because, you know, they were aiming at their base. They felt like if they got the Democratic base back out, they could win. And that's going to be probably Stacey Abrams' strategy too. If the middle comes, the middle comes. But if she can get the base out and kind of ignore, you know, let Republicans fight and take advantage of that, right? She'll welcome the Republican infighting. But I can't imagine her weighing in much and adding to that because, as we've noted in our stories and blogs and analysis, Republicans are hoping that Stacey Abrams hands them a gift by becoming that rallying point, by becoming something that can help Republicans rally around Brian Kemp and just the Republican cause because she's so vilified among the conservative base, because our last poll showed a 90% disapproval rating for her among GOP voters in Georgia. So she doesn't want to hand them a gift. She's trying not to by making any missteps that would further inflame the GOP. She's focusing on her voters and what she says is her fight for Georgia. And for her, she'll have a unified party. She'll be able to join the top of the ticket with Senator Warnock, one of her closest allies, someone she helped recruit to run for that Senate seat. So Democrats will project a sense of unity, at least at the top of the ticket. There's other problems down the ticket, which we've talked about in this podcast plenty. But at the top of the ticket, they'll be able to project a sense of unity while Republicans will have anything but.
Yeah, and Raphael Warnock is the perfect example of what happens to a Democrat when Republicans just sit on the other side of the fence and just punch each other until they're all bloody. So it's it just gave Raphael Warnock such a huge opening in 2020 to really make it into that runoff and then eventually win. So I think that it's a very recent example of what happens and the opening it gives to Democrats. So I think Stacey Abrams would be more than happy for this to continue on. And we'll have to see exactly what David Perdue decides to do. I mean, there's nothing wrong with a contested primary. I think it helps usually produce the best candidate. But in this particular instance, it seems to be driven by a factor outside of Georgia, not a factor inside of Georgia. And that's going to be a really difficult dynamic for Republicans until they get that resolved.
Well, Patricia, we will have plenty to talk about over the next year on this Politically Georgia podcast. But all of the podcasts in our AJC network have been going at full steam, producing content this week. You can go back on this feed and check out our breakdown of Andre Dickens' upset victory. We didn't even talk about that today, but have a whole podcast on that to become Atlanta's next mayor. The Access Atlanta podcast has details on an Atlanta holiday tradition coming to an end, Paul. And D-Led over at the AJC's Falcons beat previews the big game Sunday on the Bowtie Chronicles. So we also have Southern Fried Soccer with Doug Roberson looking at Atlanta United's first moves of 2021, the offseason, and then, of course, on the Braves beat report. Gabe Burns and Jay Black, our wonderful producer, dig into why there is now a labor stoppage in Major League Baseball and how that affects Freddie Freeman's negotiations, we better re-sign Freddie Freeman. That's all I can say. But we might not be able to sign him until for like 6 more months until the labor stoppage is unstopped. So we have a lot going on and much more to come, Patricia.
I didn't know about two-thirds of those podcasts, and I'm interested in all of them. I'm going for Southern Fried Soccer, and I think the holiday tradition is the pink pig that has been stopped over yes. my strong objections. So those are all fabulous Atlanta-centric podcasts and well worth digging into. So I'll spend part of my week in folding laundry and listening to those.
There you go. Well, please rate, review, follow, share, subscribe to this podcast. We love hearing your feedback. You're getting your tweets. We've been getting so much wonderful comments from our listeners as we've revived this podcast. And yeah, tune in next week for podcast 191. It's amazing to think about. Thanks, guys.
Ocean Breeze. Tropical beach, piña colada. You can buy an air freshener to make your car smell like you're in an oceanside paradise. Or, better yet, you can point your car toward Daytona Beach and come experience the real thing. Visit DaytonaBeach.com to discover all there is to see, do, and enjoy along the world's most famous beach, Daytona Beach, Florida. Beach on.
Hip-hop is a product of Black people. It's a product of Black song and celebration.
The Atlanta Journal-Constitution presents
hip-hop's most pulled elements are pulled from the South.
A Southern hip-hop story.
We always go back to that moment of the Source Awards.
Everybody wants your rhythm, but they don't want your blues.
The biggest names in hip-hop.
Atlanta is still the mecca for hip-hop.
50 years.
No one can deny.
One film.
The power of the South now.
The South got something to say. Streaming now at ajc.com/hip-hop.